This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2024 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us at Socialism 2025, which will be held in Chicago next summer, July 3rd through the 6th, 2025. If you are ready to put ideas into action and get organized with others from across the country and the world, make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Thank you all so much for being here to learn with us and engage on this really important topic of Christian Zionism. My name is Annie Wilkinson. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a senior research analyst at PRA and a member of my local faculty for justice in Palestine at Northwestern University. I want to just briefly introduce PRA and my colleagues, and I'll let you know a little bit about what we're going to do here today. So, PRA, Political Research Associates, is a think tank and strategy center. We've studied the right and opposition movements in the United States for more than 40 years to support social justice movements, to block right-wing and authoritarian attacks, and build a more feminist, religiously plural, and multiracial democracy. So research that we do spans looking at white nationalist groups, to anti-trans and anti-abortion movements, to militia movements, constitutional sheriffs, the ascendant Christian right and MAGA movements, and a lot more. I'm really, really delighted. I learn so much from my colleagues every single day, and I'm so delighted to be able to share this panel with them, to share so much of what they have to, the knowledge and experience that they bring. So let's get started. I'm gonna introduce our panelists, and we're gonna do this in two rounds. So we're gonna engage two rounds of questions, and the first round of questions for the panelists is going to focus on deepening our understanding of the phenomenon of Christian Zionism and how it builds broad political power in the U.S. as well as abroad, as a critical part of Israel's public diplomacy efforts. And in the second round, each panelist is going to highlight ways that we can and are organizing to disrupt Christian Zionist mobilizing and instead mount a genuine fight against anti-Semitism, for justice, for a free Palestine, and for anti-racist and decolonial Christian fellowship. And then we're going to open it up for some audience engagement. So, a few framing questions. Why do we need to understand Christian Zionism? Why do we put this panel together? The short answer is that Christian Zionism is probably the biggest theological and political movement that you maybe have never heard of. And without understanding this monumental political force and the role that it's playing in global and US politics, we won't be able to mount the effective response to it that we need for a free Palestine. Not to mention to achieve gender justice, economic, racial, climate justice, whose opponents share a shared set of actors with a shared set of goals. And if Mike Johnson is coming to mind, that's what I'm talking about, Mike Johnson. So I'm gonna let my colleagues offer a longer answer to this question. But I want to offer a few statistics and a few clips that we've chosen to show you to put together as a point of departure to help us grasp the scale and the character of the phenomenon that we're talking about here. So in terms of scale, there is an estimated more than 30 million Christian Zionists in the United States alone, and that's double the population of Jews worldwide. The largest Zionist organization has more Christian members than there are living Jewish Americans. So as of 2021, there's roughly 7.5 million American Jews. Christians United for Israel alone has over 10 million Christian members. And just held a summit a few weeks ago that some of our panelists here went to disrupt and learn from, which you're gonna hear a little bit more about in this panel. So I'm gonna play a few clips that we put together that help us sort of understand what this is looking like. And I'm really hoping our technology works here, so bear with me. All right, so we want to share with you the different ways that we see this phenomenon emerging. So we hear politicians using some of these ideas. We hear Congregationalists and sort of the general public. And we certainly hear some religious leaders you're going to hear more about. But just to give you a little bit of a smorgasbord of what this looks like.
And around the world, as oldest and most established democracy in the region, Israel exemplifies the core values of freedom and democracy. In fact, I tell my colleagues that Washington, D.C. is not the center of the universe. Jerusalem is the center of the universe. In fact, I read and research that you have a undergraduate and graduate degree, a school of religion at Columbia University. Is that correct?
We have affiliated institutions, Union Theological Seminary and the Jewish Theological Seminary, as well as a Department of Religion at Columbia.
In that degree program, I didn't research exactly what you teach, but are you familiar with Genesis 12:3?
Probably not as well as you are, Congressman.
Well, it's pretty clear it was a covenant that God made with Abraham. And that covenant was real clear. If you bless Israel, I will bless you. If you curse Israel, I will curse you. And then in the New Testament, it was confirmed that all nations would be blessed through you. So you do not know about that.
I have heard that now that you've explained
okay.
it.
I'm going to leave it there. So obviously, Congressman questioning the former president of Columbia University, you heard what he said. I also want to show a clip of, this is a man who moved to a megachurch in Tennessee from another area, talking a little bit about, it's a PBS NewsHour clip, him talking about why he's attracted to this church.
We turn it top to bottom. Firm in their beliefs, they're not firm believers of the Bible because they'll.
And it's an
election.
It's whoever stands with Israel. And at least in President Trump's last go around, he was much more close with Israel, much more pro Israel. And Biden has not been very strong in terms of Israel. And that's one of the commandments in the Bible. You know, whoever blesses Israel, whoever protects Israel will also receive my blessing, will also receive my protection.
There are many issues in the church that we look at biblically. We don't look at them politically.
Okay, so I'll leave it that there. Next clip is the National Hispanic Pastors Alliance. This is a promotional clip where they take pastors to Israel as part of their efforts to build their movement.
Hola, les habla el pastor Carlos Durán, presidente de la Alianza Nacional de Pastores Hispanos de los Estados Unidos. Hoy estamos en Israel con un grupo de pastores, 40 pastores de todo el país, líderes nacionales, y es el principio de un proyecto de 2 años en el cual vamos a traer 320 pastores hispanos a la raíz de nuestra fe. Este es un viaje que no es un viaje turístico. Es un viaje que les va a abrir los ojos, los va a conectar con la raíz de nuestra fe y los va a exponer a conceptos políticos, sociales, religiosos y culturales con el propósito de
religion in America.
So I didn't realize that. I forgot that was in Spanish. So just to briefly kind of explain what they're saying, this is an effort to bring hundreds of Spanish speaking, they say Hispanic, Latino, well, you know, Americans to Israel to get to the root of their faith, and they are part of this movement as well. So I'm not going to play the last clip, I'm just going to tell you about it, but it's 2 days ago, a conference in California by the Chosen People's Ministry that basically they describe how they've been around since the 1830s, and part of their mission is actually to convert Jews to Christianity. But you'll hear today at this panel that there are many variations of Christian Zionism, and that's not the only way that Christian Zionism manifests. It's also in many strands deeply anti-Semitic and not looking to convert Jews at all. So there's many different variations here, and I'm going to turn it over to the panelists to tell us a little bit more about that. So I hope that gave you a little bit of an orientation to what we're talking about here. So it's my great pleasure to introduce our panelists. First, to my left, your right, Ben Lorber, who works as a senior research analyst at PRA. He focuses on white nationalism and anti-Semitism. He's worked as a journalist, organizer, and movement builder for over a decade and has published on right-wing social movements, Israel and Palestine, Jewish culture, and other topics at a wide variety of outlets. He's also the co-author of the just published, say it with me, Safety Through Solidarity, A Radical Guide to Fighting Antisemitism. Next to Ben is Aiden. Aiden is a writer, researcher, and fundraiser at Political Research Associates and is pursuing an advanced degree in Near Eastern Studies at NYU. They regularly speak on the connections among Christian Zionism, Western imperialism, and the Jewish right to support Palestine solidarity and progressive Jewish movements, drawing from their lineage of Holocaust survivors and Israelis. Reverend Dr. Naomi Washington Liepart, at the end of the table, is a Black queer daughter of Detroit, a minister, a professor, and a movement strategist. She's the director of strategic partners at Political Research Associates and a leader and organizer with Christians for a Free Palestine, among many other things I don't have time for. And Reverend Dr. Crystal Silva McCormick is a visiting assistant professor at Austin Seminary, a scholar with the Hispanic Theological Initiative, and an ordained minister in the United Churches of Christ. And she's done extensive research on Latine Christian Zionism in the United States, is committed to land back and to decolonizing Christianity, and is engaged as a Christian activist in immigration solidarity work and organizing with Christians for a Free Palestine. So please welcome our panelists, and we're gonna start with, Aiden. And the first question for our panelists that we're gonna cover is, you know, should you just tell us a little bit about your expertise in Christian Zionism so we can really get a grasp of this phenomenon?
Sure. Well, thank you everyone for being here early on this Sunday morning. Thank you, Annie. I'm first gonna try to give us a little bit of a working definition of Christian Zionism and then go through a very brief history of it. There's obviously a lot I want people to cover. But very simply, Christian Zionist refers to any Christian who supports a Jewish ethnostate in Palestine. Christian Zionist can be liberal, far right, anything in between. But when people usually are speaking about Christian Zionism, they often refer to Christian movements that interpret the Bible literally to endorse and support specifically an authoritarian and expansionist Jewish state in Palestine. So that's probably what we're gonna be focusing on a little bit more today, that more authoritarian Christian Zionist movement. Usually Christian Zionists believe that they will receive blessings and salvation and be judged better by God if they unconditionally endorse Israel's takeover of Palestine and actually even beyond, because they believe the modern state of Israel should take over all the land of biblical Israel, which actually extends into parts of Egypt, modern day Egypt, Jordan, Iraq, Syria. So, you know, according to their vision, actually Israel would, the state of Israel would expand beyond just what were the borders, or just beyond Palestine. So many Christian Zionists take it even further than that, believing Jewish dominance in Palestine will usher in Jesus' second coming and the end of the world as we know it, whereby Christians will be saved and all others, Muslims and Jews, and will be destroyed and damned to hell. As we can see, these ideologies can become they're anti-Palestinian at their core, and also anti-Muslim, anti-Arab, and anti-Jewish. Certainly something to know about, especially as Annie said, there are tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of Christian Zionists globally, followers of this movement. I want to go through a brief history as much as I can cover in the next 3 minutes that I have to speak. The theologies behind Christian Zionism really came out of the Protestant Reformation in the 16th and 17th centuries. The idea became popularized that God has a plan for the Jews to gather in Palestine as part of his plan for Jesus' return and Christian salvation. Christian Zionist theologies came about at the same time as nation states were forming. So as British national identity was forming, this idea of Jewish return to Palestine became popular and actually became embedded in the formation of British national identity. And it might not surprise you then that the Puritans coming over to Turtle Island brought these ideas with them. So British national identity formed around the idea that God elected Britain to be the stewards of a Jewish return to Palestine. The Puritans believed that God was sending them on a mission to Turtle Island to establish a Christian nation to take over the role of steward of the Jews to Palestine away from Britain. And this was actually a prevalent ideology during the Revolutionary War against Britain, that actually the United States was the nation now that was going to steward Jews to Palestine, no longer Britain. Christians weren't actually taking political action to settle Jews in Palestine or create a Jewish state there. This was largely spiritual and theological. But the first major politician to propose resettling Jews in Palestine was actually a British evangelical man in the 1830s named Lord Shaftesbury. Again, this so 1830s, this is several decades before Theodore Herzl founded Jewish political Zionism, and this is also the height of British colonialism. So Lord Shaftesbury set up a British consulate in Jerusalem in the 1830s, 1840s, and he's actually the guy that coined the phrase, a land without a people for a people without a land, that then became popularized by Jewish Zionism later on. The first American to take major political action on behalf of creating a Jewish state in Palestine was also an evangelical man named William Blackstone in 1891. This was 5-6 years before, again, Theodore Herzl founded Jewish political Zionism. He went to Palestine, he took a trip there and returned and gathered the signatures of forefront American leaders at the time, like John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, the editors of the New York Times, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, mayors of New York, Philly, Boston, Chicago, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, many university presidents, and future President William McKinley, all signing a petition that was presented to then President Harrison to establish a Jewish state in Palestine 5-6 years before Theodore Herzl. This petition didn't end up, of course, creating a Jewish state in Palestine, but it did popularize the idea of one in the American psyche. And of course, the 1890s is also when the US is growing and about to, is on the precipice of becoming a major imperial power around the globe. So just a couple more examples, then I'll pass it off, a couple more points about Christian Zionist history. Theodore Herzl himself was actually a pretty obscure figure, but he was launched into international recognition by his friend William Heckler, an evangelical man who had connections with the German Kaiser and the Ottoman Sultan and other world leaders. And without Heckler, it's unclear if Herzl actually would have remained in obscurity. So we see the story of political Zionism does not begin with Theodore Herzl. It predates him. Jewish Zionism has never existed without Christian Zionism. And Jewish Zionism has largely allied itself with Christian Zionism since its inception. So this is, Zionism became, it was originally a Christian movement, but it became a deeply interfaith partnership. And I think that's an important distinction to understand. And Jewish Zionism has always depended on Western Christianity, including Christian Zionists, for legitimacy, support, and power. Moving into the 20th century, Arthur Balfour, who signed the Declaration promising Jews a homeland in Palestine, was deeply influenced by Christian Zionist ideology, as was President Woodrow Wilson, the American president that endorsed the Balfour Declaration. Christian Zionists viewed the establishment of Israel in 1948 as proof of God's intervention and plan for the state of Israel to be a key part of bringing about Jesus's return. And Christian Zionists also believe that Israel's victories in 1967, 1973 were further proof of God's divine intervention, which actually, it was after 1967 that Christian Zionism really solidified into a massive political force in the United States. And Israel has been courting Christian Zionists also since its creation, largely through tourist trips, media, and many other methods. So, yeah, today Christian Zionism is a super important faction in the American Christian right and also globally. But we'll get more to that probably with my colleagues. Thank you.
Thanks, Aiden. Thanks, Annie. Thanks, everyone. Yeah, I think what you just said, Aiden, really brings home for me how the white Christian West, European, you know, Christendom has been so, you know, invested in the idea of Jewish, you know, quote unquote, return to Israel, you know, as part of their imperial and settler colonial projects and ambitions, right? You know, going back all the way to the Crusades, I mean, you know, the Holy Land has been an object of fascination by Western Christendom, really, for over a millennium. And you pointed out, you know, really well how the leaders of the white Christian West have really been invested in propping up Jewish political Zionism, really from the very beginning. I want to move it. I also thought it was interesting, like you mentioned, like Lord Balfour, who signed the 1917 Balfour Declaration. And one thing people don't often know about him is that he signed that both because he was animated by these Christian Zionist theologies of returning Jews to bring the Messiah, but he also thought that that, you know, more Jews being immigrants in Britain would be subversive communists who would overthrow his capitalist order. He was also deeply anti-immigrant and anti-Semitic, and so he wanted Jews out of Europe, out of Britain. You know, the Bolshevik Revolution had just happened. He was a deeply committed, you know, anti-communist. So it just shows how these Christian Zionist theologies have been a core part of repressing the left, core part of anti-Semitism from the very beginning. So moving it into the present, like Annie said, Christian Zionism is a huge movement. One 2017 survey estimated 80% of evangelicals in the U.S. think Israel is the fulfillment of prophecy, a sign of the second coming. They think that rising anti-Semitism around the world is part of God's plan, right? These are some of the people who claim to be the most devoted to fighting anti-Semitism. They say that they were the best friends Jews have ever had. They lobby for passing the IHRA definition and other restrictive policies aimed at suppressing the Palestine Liberation Movement based on supposedly fighting anti-Semitism. But at the same time, their theology says that rising anti-Semitism is a sign that Jesus is returning, and they're actually quite happy about it in a really perverse way. As Annie mentioned, a lot of new Christian Zionist movements aren't content merely with saying, oh, Jews have to return to Israel. They're also like, we also have to convert Jews. We also have to appropriate Jewish ritual, right? Like you see, you know, them blowing shofars and holding Passover seders, right? In some ways, some Christian Zionists are now moving to Israel themselves. It's almost like they're becoming the Jews, the Jewish settler colonists of their imagination, right? They're also deeply anti-Palestinian, anti-Muslim, anti-Arab, right? They see Palestinians, much like all Zionists do, as basically a non-entity or mere obstacles to God's plan, right? They think you know, Islam is satanic, and in that way, they're very similar to the rest of the Christian nationalist movement. They believe in this, you know, the deeply Islamophobic a clash of civilizations thesis, right? That the quote unquote Judeo-Christian West has to be at war with radical Islam, and Israel is like the frontline defender of the West in this war, right? And they see a war against Iran or Hezbollah. war in the Middle East, dragging the U.S. into World War III. They see this all as part of God's plan, right? So right now they're lobbying overtime for war with Iran, lobbying overtime for the U.S., you know, to send more arms to Israel. They're part of the broader Christian nationalist movement, right? It's really important. The folks who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, the folks who pass anti-LGBTQ legislation, the folks who are deeply committed to rolling back reproductive rights, these are all Christian Zionists. The leaders of the Christian right have been to Israel several times since October 7th and come back and tell millions of followers in the U.S. to, you know, to support like whatever the Israeli right wants to do, right? These are not, you know, separate movements. Like the Christian nationalist movement that's like rolling back our rights and destroying our democracy and attacking LGBTQ folks, folks with uteruses, attacking the movement for Black Lives, basically attacking all of our movements, are deeply at the forefront of the Christian Zionist movement also. Just to end real quick, those of us who know about a Christian Zionism, like, we usually focus on Christians United for Israel, right? And Pastor John Hagee, who's like the most vocal Christian Zionist, he spoke at the March for Israel in November 2023 at the U.S. He's allied with lots of Jewish leaders, right? But Kufi is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole a global network of Christian Zionist groups that we don't hear about. For example, there's the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. They had a budget of $230 million in 2022. They fund infrastructure in Israel. They claim to be the largest non-governmental philanthropic org in Israel. They help Jews around the world make aliyah. They claim that in the last few decades, they've helped over 700,000 Jews move to Palestine. And they target often elderly Holocaust survivors who are in poverty in Eastern Europe, refugees from the former Soviet Union, and they give them monetary incentives. They say, like, we'll help pay off your debts to move you to Israel to fulfill our end time scenario. They're like, they're preying on vulnerable people in a really sick way. There's the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem, who holds a massive annual global pilgrimages of Christians all around the world during Christian holidays. They have branch offices in over 90 countries, and they have tens of millions of supporters worldwide. There's a group called the Israel Allies Foundation that creates and supports pro-Israel caucuses of Christian legislators and over 50 national legislators worldwide. That's over 1,200 lawmakers as of 2022 who are organized into these Christian Zionist caucuses to advance radical right policies in Israel. They even have a caucus to influence the Israeli Knesset itself. There's a group called Passages that's basically the Christian birthright. Over the last decade, they've brought over 10,000 Christian college students on Israel propaganda trips from over 600 schools. There's Hayovel that helps build settlements in the West Bank. They've brought over 3,000 Christians from 30 countries to literally farm in the West Bank. There's American Christian Leaders for Israel, that's a network of U.S. Christian leaders who represent over 60 million Americans who lobby for all kinds of bad policies. I could go on and on, but I just want to end with one quote from David Parsons, who heads the ICEJ. He said, our new areas of growth are in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. We go to Brazil, and there's a stadium filled with 120,000 people waving Brazilian and Israeli flags. And we go to Africa, and there's 10,000 pastors gathered to pray for Israel. And, you know, we're engaging with our Chinese Christian leaders, and their church networks number in the tens of millions, and God is speaking to them to get involved with Israel. And to me, it's a move of the Holy Spirit. So he said that in 2020. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Aiden and Ben, for that overview. And I want to hand it to Crystal, Reverend Crystal and Naomi, to talk a little bit more about how Christian Zionists are expanding their movements and what this is looking like.
Thank you. I'm really grateful to be here with these esteemed colleagues. I want to pick up on, Ben and Aiden, what you have shared about Latina Christian Zionism, but specifically in the United States. And I'll say a little bit about how that relates to Latin America. What I want to say first and foremost is that Latina Christian Zionists, as you can imagine, they're not a monolith, right? So it's not going to all look the same, but there's some defining features that have already been named. And that Genesis 12:3 verse is going to be so important. That is going to feature prominently. And then the other thing is the literal interpretation of scripture, it was born out of the Protestant Reformation in Europe, this idea of the plain sense of scripture. So you see that word Israel, you see nation, and you think in modern terms, right? And so that's such a defining feature that has been exported by missionaries, by Euro-American missionaries all over not only Latin America, but especially Latin America. And so those are some really important defining features. And another thing about Christian Zionism, especially in the U.S., is that it hinges so much on U.S. exceptionalism, right? So you are going to find so much whiteness in there. These embedded ideas that white is superior. Even if it's not overt, it is there. It is overt sometimes, and then other times it's hiding. So you think to yourself, how is it that people from minoritized communities contend with these ideas if the idea is that white is superior, that the U.S. is the ideal? And so I wanted to share with you just a little bit of, I did a qualitative study with Latina Christians here in the U.S., and most of them, not all of them, were immigrants to this country. And one of them, an immigrant here, came as an undocumented person. And in our interview, she cited her immigration status. It's not a question. And I want to share with you that she said, "Esta es la casa de los Anglos." This is the house of the Anglos. Embedded in her belief system is that this nation is the home and it run by white people. And she wasn't saying it as a criticism. She lamented that she came here undocumented, that she sinned, is the language she used, and that she was going to right this wrong. How? By making Israel the center of her Christian faith. And this was why she explained to me that the church that we were in, where I interviewed her, was so blessed. She showed it to me, the building, and it wasn't exorbitant, but she said, this is so, our communities is so profound. Our communities cannot just survive, it is so they can thrive. So why I'm saying this is not to justify, but it's to understand what is being sold using that Genesis 12:3 verse. Because she cited to me and she said, we are being blessed in this church, and I am being blessed because now I have an attorney. The church has me an attorney to help with my immigration status. And then she said, and all the countries in Latin America, if they had Israel as their center like the U.S. does, they would have political and economic stability. Again, citing Genesis 12:3, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who don't will be cursed. So this is important to get into this worldview and what she is doing with whiteness as a woman from Latin America. What is she doing with that whiteness and the way she's internalized it, and then the way that it's been used to help her understand her world as an undocumented woman with the many things that she has experienced to cross the border and to try and navigate life here in the house of the Anglos. And another woman that I interviewed who is a pastor from, I won't name the country, but she explained to me how compelling her trip to Israel was, and that she encountered Palestinian children. And this was not a question, also she raised it, and she said, my heart broke for those little ones and I gave them money. And I could see that she was trying to express some sort of compassion and sympathy for Palestinians. And she said, but I cannot help what scripture says. So the interpretation of scripture, this literalist interpretation, really solidifies the cognitive dissonance. Violence against Palestinians, their apartheid, ethnic cleansing, genocide, as we're saying, is okay because scripture demands it. So these are theologies of violence, even with people who have experienced so much violence by U.S. empire. And that's heartbreaking. That's so heartbreaking. So this is what people from minoritized communities are doing with this feature of U.S. exceptionalism and whiteness, right? And others that I interviewed are like, oh, no, we don't really believe in that. This is just biblical. So there is going to be variation, but this interpretation of scripture, literalism, born in the Protestant Reformation, still there, Islamophobia, anti-Palestinian sentiment because they will lump Arabs, right, into one category. And I want to say a little bit about organizations like Kufi Kufai in Espanol, the Latino Coalition for Israel, and Filos, which is its own entity, and then has Filos Latino, Filos Black, Filos Catholic, trying to get everybody. What they are selling, especially Kufai en Español, but they all share this feature, is they're telling Latina communities that they come from Sephardic Jews. So what you will hear is people saying that in interviews. Well, this is my heritage. This is my heritage as a Latina, Latinx, Hispanic person. This is my heritage, Sephardic Judaism. So what you've seen also since this genocide started is a lot of people identify as Hispanic, Latina, Latinx, saying that they're going back to their heritage and finding their Jewish roots. Okay, but what we should be hearing is that some Christian Zionist is trying to do something to obscure what's really happening so that they don't know. Because this is the mental erasure of Palestinians, right? And then the other thing, which is very Islamophobic, and anti-Arab, is to tell Latina communities that they share Judaic values, family, those types of things, as if Arabs and Palestinians and Muslims do not have these values. So it's inherently very Islamophobic. And it is anti-Semitic, right? Because as already Ben and Aiden have shared, Jews are objects from the very, very beginning in these narratives. Jews are objects. They are not cared for because they are human beings who need solidarity from anti-Semites. People tell themselves this, but they are objects, not just for the end time narrative, but because, oh, this makes me feel good because I'm following scripture, what have you, or appropriating Jewish rituals and things like this. It really isn't care for all. And I would note that if you go to Philos, .com, I believe, Philos, and then you see, this is how the new Christian Zionism, is what they call themselves, is just evolving. They're hiding their Islamophobia, not very well, but they're trying. Anti-Palestinian sentiment, they're pretending to be neutral brokers in what they call the Near East. So this is really important because they are attracting students, and then again, Filos Black, Filos Catholic. They're trying really intentionally to reach people and say, we're just being neutral brokers. We just want peace. But they are Christian Zionists, fundamentally. They may be a different flavor, and so they are anti-Palestinian, they are Islamophobic, they support the genocide. So just because they're giving us different flavors doesn't mean that that they somehow are neutral brokers or want what is best for Palestinians or Christians in the Near East, as they say, because they don't advocate when Christians are being harmed. So these are important, I think, things to note. As things change. And then the last thing I'll say, I'm sorry, I went over time. Okay, is that there's a reciprocal and circular relationship with Latina Christian Zionist organizations or organizations that are trying to reach the Latina community in Latin America and here. They're going to reach government officials. They have meetings with government officials. They're having people take trips, pastors like you saw in that video. And so then people migrate here, they plant churches, they have relationships in Latin America. So you're seeing this relationship be circular and reciprocal, okay? And then when you start doing research, it doesn't take that much to find the same actors hiding behind the scenes, the same Latino pastors, and then the support from entities in Israel. So it's not hard to see these connections and to find them, and that they're very active and just growing very strong. And so that's something we can talk more about later, what was the presence of the people at Kufai. But just these are things I think to note, because the face of Christian Zionism in the U.S. has largely been white. But after 2014, white evangelicals started to decrease in their numbers, and they started targeting minoritized communities. And that is just got a lot of fuel right now. So those things are to be considered.
Yeah, and I just want to add, just to sort of reinforce what Crystal's saying. Most of my research has been in Latin America, and I study primarily anti-gender movements. And at the one of the most fundamental anti-gender conferences in Mexico that I was at, guess who was there? But a person who was hired by, like an Israeli, who was hired by the Israeli consulate to come do outreach to the evangelical community. And that was his sole job. So just to reinforce the idea that there are strong connections between these actors and also the extent of their outreach in Latin America.
And I'm sorry, thank you for saying that, because can I add that there's fundamentally the whiteness and the anti-indigeneity. Mm-hmm. So I did a case study in Guatemala, and that I'm sure is going to feature over anti-indigeneity, anti-Palestinian and anti-indigenous sentiment in the indigenous people that are from Latin America. So that's another defining feature that you're going to see in Latina Christian Zionism.
Yes, and the peril of white civilization or Christian or Western civilization and all of that coded, loaded content. Reverend Naomi.
I'm so sorry.
Good morning, everybody. I want to begin with a bit of a story. So on January 8th of this year, there were Palestinian Liberation Movement protesters at the Mother Emanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston. They were there protesting President Biden's presence and speech there. They interrupted him to confront him about the U.S. funding of and refusal to stop the genocide. And while Biden was about to acknowledge the victims of the 2015 attack on Mother Emanuel, you remember that Dylann Roof shot up the Bible, the prayer meeting, the Bible study. One non-black protester stood up and said, if you really care about the lives that were lost here, then you should honor the lives lost and call for a ceasefire in Palestine. That protester and the others with her, one of whom was black, were escorted out of the church as members of the audience shook their heads or even yelled at them. The most shocking moment in the room was when people responded to the protesters escorting out with, they were chanting free Palestine, with a counter chant of four more years, standing up, clapping for Biden, the very man who had been called to accountability for the genocide. This was a despicable display of what we're gonna call black Christian Zionism. And so I want to, as Reverend Crystal did, talk a little bit about some of the features of black Christian Zionism. And I'm grounding my remarks in some notes I took from a study that was done by Dr. Roger Bauman, who's assistant professor of sociology at Hope College in Michigan. He just published this year a book called Black Visions of the Holy Land, African American Christian Engagement with Israel and Palestine. So Bauman argues that the political religious discourse of black Christian Zionism produces a form of black church political engagement more in the prosperity gospel than in social gospel terms. And we've hinted at this all throughout. So in other words, there is what I would call an exploitation of this deep desire by black folk to find in their faith a strategy, a means by which they can be prosperous, they can be successful in a context, right, that has been very anti-black and anti-black success. So what Bauman did was he spent 2 years from January 2013 to April 2015 doing some field work among pro-Israel Christian Zionist activists who were in black church contexts. He focused primarily on the efforts of Kufi to engage in this kind of outreach, specifically in black church spaces. So again, Kufi has its tentacles everywhere and is deliberately trying to recruit black folk for its movement. So here are the kinds of things the kinds of events that Bauman attended in these black church contexts. Worship services, interest meetings, Israel-specific teaching meetings, Sunday school classes, Jewish-Christian interfaith events called Nights to Honor Israel, Bible study meetings, and pastors' briefings where Kufi movement leaders would come and brief those pastors on the topic of Israel. He talked to 28 different black pastors, lay leaders, and church members. So this is, you know, this was an unprecedented kind of study of how black Christian Zionism operates. And I want to just quote some of the notes that he took, some of the sermons and speeches he excerpted in this article. On one of these nights to honor Israel, the host pastor, who was Ray Bernard, took to the stage to welcome people who came. And he said, tonight, we're here to honor Israel. And he added that the evening would be a reflection on the reason why Israel is, quote, the apple of God's eye. He went on to tell his story about how he came to understand the importance of standing with Israel. And he said, as Christians, we take every opportunity that we have, lifting up that Star of David and praying for our Jewish brothers and sisters, because we all really find our origin from the same family. We come from the same root. So again, framing this as a kind of ancestral proximity to Jewish folk. And let me also say, leveraging any guilt or anxiety that black folk might feel about repaying the debt that to Jewish folk for Jewish assistance and accompaniment in things like the civil rights movement. The next speaker at this Night to Honor Israel event was Jonathan Leith, another black pastor and co-host of the event. And he outlined three reasons why he supports Israel. First, he cited a clear mandate in scripture to stand with Israel, often quoting, often in these events, they quote the Genesis passage that we've already referred to. He quoted Psalm 122, verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, they shall prosper that love thee. And then he went on to say, I love prosperity. So I understand how I get prosperity by praying for the peace of Jerusalem. The keynote speaker at this Night to Honor Israel was Pastor Michael Stevens. He leads a large congregation in the denomination, historically black denomination, the Church of God in Christ in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he also worked as Kufi's African American outreach coordinator from 2007 to 2015. So he traveled extensively for Kufi, hosted pro-Israel events in black churches around the world. And he said this, during a time of prayer and Bible study, the Lord placed on my heart the blessings that stem from supporting Israel and standing with it. As I studied Genesis 12, God opened my eyes and gave emphatic instructions for my young black Pentecostal church and myself. I sensed him, God, saying we were to bless Israel and the Jewish people. So Stevens emphasized these words in his remarks, favor and increase. The blessings of God can come on your life if you bless the Jewish people. And he said, if you stand and support Israel, you will receive God's blessing, prosperity, power, and favor. Let me say something about this notion of power. So in addition to kind of individual material blessings and favor that might come from supporting Israel, Stephen's teaching on this also anticipates that when black Christians support Israel, they will then get political power and access, right? So when he speaks at these pro-Israel events, Pastor Michael Stevens typically shows a series of pictures of himself with well-known political and religious leaders. And he told this accompanying story of sitting at a table with a group of black pastors and Netanyahu. He said, being at the table was a unique honor. More than the domestic honor of my personally being at the table, that day, 8 African American pastors sat at that table. And since that time, I've learned and I've grown to call it the table of greatness. I believe, particularly in the African American community, there is a seat at the table of greatness, particularly as it relates to supporting the Jewish state. He extended this metaphor of the table of greatness by also telling his black audience, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So again, this reframe of political power and access that may leverage and appropriate notions of black liberation theology to talk about how black churches are supposed to be invested and involved in kind of social movements, but deliberately then turning the corner to say, and this is how. You want to be blessed, you want access to political power, you want access to political influence, join this pro-Israel movement. Let me just close by saying that this kind of, I think, perverse use of the legacy of folk like King, who preached a social gospel, is kind of race conscious when it wants to be. So in other words, we can leverage black liberation theology when we want to fire our people up to be involved in something beyond local church context, right? Beyond whether you can pay your own bills, beyond what's going on in your immediate community. When we want people to have a more global outlook, we draw on the tradition of black liberation theology. But the race consciousness of that theology ends there. The article really troubled me. There were a bunch of quotes around how the black Christian Zionists did not see any parallels in the way Palestinians were treated and their own experience of oppression in the United States. Instead, they associated suffering with what's going on in Jewish contexts, right? So they didn't see the Palestinians as suffering and worthy of their compassion, prayer, and action. Instead, they saw Jewish folk as suffering and worthy of their compassion, prayer, and action. Here's a quote from a Pittsburgh pastor that described a sense of brotherhood with Jews in Israel, linking black experiences of slavery to Jewish suffering during the Holocaust. This pastor says, "I felt even brotherhood with Jews because of our history, African American history, of being enslaved and persecuted in such an injustice. And when I went to the Holocaust Memorial, I felt that kindred spirit of a race that had gone through similar oppression as we went through." So again, these Israel propaganda tours. I mean, I grew up in a black Baptist church on the west side of Detroit, and I remember getting those brochures every year and being encouraged by our pastor to sign up for these, what I now know to be Israel propaganda tours, so you could walk where Jesus walked, right? Again, this taking advantage of black Christian kind of pietistic ambitions to be close to Jesus, to be close to where Jesus hung out, and simply ignoring. I mean, when I went to Palestine, I was like, the wall is right there. How do you not, right? But again, if you're framing this in a certain way and you've got Kufi giving you all your talking points, it's clear how black folk get enshrined into this pro-Israel movement. So I'll stop there.
Thank you. Christians United for Israel. I don't know if it's Kufi or Kufi. We're debating that. So we at Political Research Associates go beyond documenting the right. So we don't want to just share what Christian Zionism is and what they're doing. We also don't pretend that there's some sort of easy solutions. So having said that, it is really important for us to include also what we do about this, and hence the end of the subtitle there, how we fight it. So. Again, not like there's sort of like easy solutions here, but we do want to platform and highlight some of the ways that folks are resisting or changing or pushing back against these narratives, and that's really important as well. So each of our panelists is just going to take about 5 minutes, no more, because we also want to leave room for some audience engagement to tell us a little bit about that, coming from all these different perspectives. So go ahead, Aiden, if you would start.
Sure, yeah. I want to talk to the power of narrative change, not because it's itself enough, but because it's an important intervention. Talking about Christian Zionism, understanding Christian Zionism, just automatically debunks so much of mainstream Zionist myths. I mean, the fact that Zionism equals Judaism or anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism is clearly debunked by the fact that Christian Zionism is older than Jewish Zionism and has always far overpopulated Jewish Zionism, or has been a much bigger movement than Jewish Zionism. And the idea that Zionism keeps Jews safe is debunked by the simple fact that Christian Zionism is inherently anti-Semitic at its core, and that Zionism is premised on Christian Zionism, or originates in Christian Zionism. And then understanding Christian Zionism is also critical for having a fuller power analysis of what is happening in Palestine. This is clearly not an Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There's way more stakeholders around the world. And Christian Zionism is not merely, it's not a new movement, and it's not just supporting Jewish Zionism or supporting the Israeli state. It is a fundamental architect of the Jewish state and an essential block holding up and protecting the Israeli state from accountability. So Christian Zionism just kind of like debunks the fact that Zionism is a Jewish movement born out of oppressed Eastern European Jews to liberate themselves. No, this was originally a Christian movement that Jewish Zionists then bought into and made their own. And I think also understanding the history of Christian Zionism and the fact that Western Christianity wanted to displace Jews onto Palestine also informs the fact that the Western Christianity also wanted to displace anti-Semitism and the responsibility for anti-Semitism onto Palestinians. And that Jewish Zionists and Israeli Zionists right now in the genocide in Gaza, in the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, are directly carrying out the work of that Christian Zionists had imagined before Jewish Zionism even existed. Christian Zionism was imagining, they imagined Palestine as an empty land, but certainly many Christian Zionists visited Palestine. They knew it was not empty. They imagined the emptying of Palestine and the Jewish takeover and domination of Palestine, and Jewish Zionists, Israeli Zionists right now are doing that work for them. I think for those of us who are Jewish, that's an important, it feels like an important reframe against the idea that somehow carrying out a genocide in Palestine is part of the work of keeping Jews safe, when we're actually fulfilling the wishes of Christian Zionism that goes back before Jewish Zionism even existed. There's even a U.S. general, a former U.S. general who served in Iraq, who argues on a video on PragerU, you can look it up, and he says we should front load our American financial support to Israel because Israelis are sacrificing their blood against the so-called Muslim enemy so that Americans don't have to. So again, Jewish and Israeli Zionists carrying out the work of the Western world, buying into the agenda of Christian Zionism while marketing it as Jewish self-protection. And last thing I'll say is, in the opening plenary, Sumaya Awad asked, how do we speak to those who aren't yet where we are? And I think Christian Zionism opens up that opportunity. Certainly it gives Christians in the United States and in the West and more of a stake in opening. This is not just a Jewish issue. This is not just a Palestinian issue. This is not just a Muslim issue, Arab issue. Christians have always been involved, and there's a role for Christians to play. And a lot of them are, including amazing people on this panel. And certainly for Jewish communities, understanding Christian Zionism gives Jews a deeper stake and really illuminates how Jewish freedom and liberation is inherently dependent on Palestinian freedom and Palestinian liberation. Because the forces that originally planned the colonization of Palestine also were deeply anti-Semitic in ideology as well.
Thank you, Eden. Ben?
Yeah, yeah. echoing everything Aiden just said, everything everyone's said up here so far. I'm really excited to hear what you all think. We have a lot to talk about this. So I'll be quick. Like, I feel like, we're in a moment of like mass radicalization, as everyone here knows, around Palestine, right? Since October 7th, we've had millions of folks hitting the streets. We need more targets. We need more organizations to protest. We need more avenues for people to get involved. And, you know, there's likely a Christian Zionist organizations, you know, where you live, like in your city. There's likely churches who are holding a Christian Zionist event all the time. There's likely many Christian folks in your communities who are newly radicalizing around this. Like, a recently released poll showed that from 2018 to 2021, support for Israel fell from 69% to 33% among young American evangelicals. And that was only in 2021, right? Like, when you start to listen to Christian Zionist leaders, you hear how they're terrified that they're losing support, right? And the state of Israel is worried that they're losing support among new generations of evangelicals. So I think there's really an opening here. I think, you know, we in the Palestine Solidarity Movement need to always have a really sharp, clear analysis of the structures and the forces and the base of support for Zionism around the world. And I think it's really important to focus on organizations like AIPAC, obviously. But we're not going to win unless we really take a full picture of the base of support for Zionism in the U.S. and around the world, which is like largely Christian and largely led by these Christian Zionist organizations, at least in cementing the ideology, like the hegemony of Zionism in ways that we've all been describing. I also think often our movements are very siloed, right? There's many, you know, organizations in the U.S. right now who are focusing on the fight against Christian nationalism, you know, domestically, pushing back against horrific anti-trans bills, pushing back on the gutting of like Roe v. Wade, trying to save democracy, right? Some of these orgs are more liberal than many of us in this room, but they're fighting the right, which is really important. And I think, you know, by connecting these dots around fighting Christian nationalism here domestically and fighting Christian Zionism, which is basically U.S. foreign policy, by showing like these are the same people moving these same causes, I think we can like broaden our coalition, as Aiden was saying. Like, we can broaden the Palestine Solidarity Movement, find new allies, make new connections, and really build like a stronger base to win. And that includes obviously taking on, you know, the Democrats and what we've started to mention here of like the mainstream Christian Zionism, which is not only on the right. So yeah, I think tracing these connections can also help us situate, you know, a Jewish nationalism in Israel, Christian nationalism in the U.S. as part of like global religious ethno-nationalism worldwide. And tracing those dots can also help us build global struggles.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Ben. And Naomi and Crystal have been involved in some really great actions recently. One of those new groups that has emerged is Christians for Free Palestine. So they're going to tell us a little bit about some of the actions that they've been doing. We have 10 minutes for that. And then we really do want to hear from you. So I do
want to pull up your slides. Okay, great. So I want to tell you about Christians for Free Palestine, which is a new formation that emerged after the big JVP action last fall in D.C. You know, folks were like, where are the Christians? And where's the analysis, right, of how Christian Zionism has played an outsized role in determining American attitudes about Israel and, of course, how America supports financially and in terms of policy Israel. So here's Christians for Free. We're working on it. So www.christiansforfreepalestine.com is our website. We have a growing and diverse team of leaders on our core leadership team. Myself and Reverend Crystal serve on that core leadership team. We all have different points of entry to the Palestinian liberation movement, but we are all deeply committed to giving our time, our expertise, and our energy, our religious kind of spiritual energy to this work. Oh, well.
Coming.
There it is.
Oh, just real slow.
Oh,
it's
almost.
So
here's a picture of the national leadership team. I won't go into detail about each person, but you can find us on social media. We're at Christians for Free Palestine on Instagram. Here are the CFP principles. You can read them. We bring our faith into the public sphere, and we see Christians as responsible, as accountable to Palestinians who lead us to liberation. Well, that's all I'll say about that. Let's go to the next slide. So I want to tell you about two of our first actions. One was in March, where we did a series of distributed actions in 22 cities around the country. We got people on mass calls for a couple of months and talked to them about what it means to plan liturgical direct action. This is direct action that is grounded by kind of radical liturgy, radical Christian liturgy. And we did one in Philadelphia, where I live. There was one in New York. There were some on the West Coast, some in the South, right? We wanted people to creatively come up with ways to confront Christian Zionism in their backyards. And so for some people, that looked like protesting in politician offices. For other people, that looked like doing liturgies and sermons in their church context, right? But we did that in March, and we kind of tested our model of trying to build a base from local contexts so people could plan actions that were relevant and meaningful to them. Then in April, we went to DC. We said we wanted to interrupt Congress's sort of business as usual attitude. And, you know, during this time there was a lot of coverage around the impending famine in Gaza. And so we said, listen, if Gaza can't eat, neither will the Senate. And we disrupted the Senate cafeteria operations by sort of stealthily going into the cafeteria and then beginning to sing, Palestine will be free, Palestine will be free. And we sang that over and over again until they arrested us and took us out, right? And so you can see some, I meant to also say that before the cafeteria action, we had a worship service in view of the Capitol building where we were articulating our theological frame, right? That all land is holy, that all people are holy, that Palestinians are children of God, right? These are the kinds of theological messages we wanted to demonstrate. And so there are a couple of pictures, and I think Crystal's going to talk about the action. Oh,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Forget the slide deck. But Chris was going to talk about our July action where we confronted the Kufi conference.
Thank you. And just for if anyone needs this grounding, Christians United for Israel is located in San Antonio, Texas. Right now they claim they have over 10 million members, largely white evangelical. But that's changing, as we've already discussed. And they fund settlements. They use a nonprofit status as a church, so who knows what all they're doing with their money in addition to funding settlements. So just a little bit about them. And they were in D.C. when we were there in July lobbying. And they were all dressed in blue. There were countless of them lobbying for more arms, more money. Ironically, why are they there when it's a given, right? But this is part of their Christian faith. They say, this is what God wants, so they're there lobbying. So there were five groups of about four of us who registered and were in. But prior, while we were sitting in our seats pretending to be good Christian Zionists, there were others who were leading singing and disrupted by singing songs about freedom and justice from the Christian perspective in the lobby of this massive, I don't remember what it's called.
Gaylord
Center. Mm-hmm. Also ironic. But they were singing, and then it delayed. So while you all were doing the disruptive singing action, which delayed everything, and we were delighted to know because John Hagee's son came and said, we're delayed. And then they realized that they were probably going to have disruptors inside. So they were instructed that when the disruptors began to disrupt, to start shouting in their faces, Israel lives. And then John Hagee came to the stage after the delay from the beautiful singing action that disrupted in the lobby of the conference center. John Hagee came and said that we were enemies of Zion, quoting scripture, and he couldn't wait to see the wrath of God come against the enemies of Zion. And so just reminding us of the inherent violence in these theologies, the inherent violence that even pervades so-called liberal, right, progressive Christian spaces, because there is such a strong fear of being anti-Semitic that they don't have a way to say, how do we do this? Safety for everybody. You know, Ben's book, but, and he didn't ask me to plug it, but I am. Safety, right? Safety, solidarity for everybody. Liberal, right, white Christians are lacking that because they want to remain silent here or support Israel because they think that's a way to fight anti-Semitism. So another way to fight Christian Zionism in like liberal white spaces is to complicate this, to tell them the truth, and to encourage safety for everyone, not just, their perception of Jews, and especially when there are many anti-Zionist Jews that they ignore as well. But I have ADD, sorry for this digression. But okay, so now we're in the Christians United for Israel being told we're enemies of Zion and all these things, and we stood on chairs and disrupted in groups. So we sporadically, you know, kept them running around, and by the time they got to our group, they were super upset and tossed us around a little bit. And a friend of mine lost his glasses. I lost his shoe. fortunately, I had spandex under my dress. But they really were upset. And one of them said, I knew it. You know, I don't know if we didn't blend in well, but we tried. And our anti-Zionist Jewish friends were there saying, we will not be your pawns. That was their shout. And, our shout was in Spanish, alto al genocidio, stop the genocide. And there was a man in front of me, and he was Latino, I know it, and he was shouting at me, Israel lives. And that's really actually painful to see that, to experience that. Not that I'm a victim, absolutely not, but it's just so painful to see that people love violence so much in the name of their faith. And that I can say to someone, as has done at the DNC and other spaces, stop this violence, and they will say Israel lives, whatever that means to them. It's so awful and horrific that these are so profoundly violent theologies, and they profess to be so moral. So I think disrupting is important. Rupture in relationships, I'm not encouraging the pursuit of rupture, but it's going to happen. And Christianity for too long has said this way to do things is to have peace. And peace means not upsetting anyone, not causing any problems. And we are here to cause problems, okay? Because we need to complicate things for people. They need to understand their history. And this doesn't just go for the Latina community, but they need a theopolitical analysis. They need to understand that so much of our Christianity is rooted in Euro-American colonialism and imperialism. And a lot of times people say, oh, that's leftist language. No, friend, that's history. That's history. That is the history. And so many Christians in Latin America, and then those who are immigrants here, don't know that history. There are many that do, but there are many that don't. And that's why if I'm in a community of immigrant workers talking about Palestine, and I show them a picture of the wall. I don't know if we have it. If not, it's okay. And I say, is this the wall in the southern border, or is this the wall in Palestine? They're able to make those connections right away. But if I'm in a group of Latina Christians, I have to start somewhere else completely, right? Or in within minutes, they're like Hamas supporter. Because they can't see the connections because all they hear is that interpretation of scripture. So you have to complicate things for people. You have to give them pieces that complicate things for them so that they can start to untangle those narratives within themselves and within their minds. And especially for Christians who always want to espouse peace and the love of God and things, they need to be challenged about their support of violence. So I think those are the things that we have to do. We have to disrupt. We have to be willing to have rupture in relationships, and we have to be willing to upset people. We have to. And we have to counter the narratives that this is somehow unchristian to do this, when it is very thoroughly Christian. We should be anti-colonial, anti-imperialist, and we have to proclaim this anti-imperial, anti-colonialist Christianity from every pulpit and every space. Mm.
Thank you all so much for that. We have a few minutes, less than we'd like, but we're going to take what we have to do questions. So I'm going to take three at a time. Comrade in the pink hat, comrade with the black scarf, and comrade with the keffiyeh, and one in front. We'll take four. I think I'm going to have to bring this down.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Gumbo from Austin. So this one's a little bit of a softball for my comrade Crystal, but I'm curious the ways in which, especially our two reverends over here, use your congregations and your churches to push the movement forward. I think about the University Baptist Church near UT that like opened its doors to students fleeing the Texas state troopers during the student intifada. And I'm also curious what lines of argument seem to work with Christians. Like, I grew up in South Louisiana, I grew up Catholic, and then went to school in the Bible Belt. And so I automatically assume most people who are devoutly Christian are gonna be some sort of conservative. But that's not always the case, and it doesn't need to be the case. And I'm curious how to start those conversations with people when they either don't think they need to care or they're openly hostile.
I'm just going to, are we taking the questions first? I'm sorry.
I'll take four.
Yes, go ahead.
We'll probably have just one round.
My bad. Yeah.
Well, thank you all very much for your solidarity. As a Palestinian Christian, I really appreciate it. I have two questions / reflections. If I talk too long, please stop me. Because yesterday we also had a panel. I was with the Reverend Naomi, and we didn't have a chance to have a Q&A. And there's a lot of things I wanted to talk about, especially with both of you. First question about the intersection with prosperity gospel. I appreciate you brought it up. I really want to dwell about what that means for certain people, especially those that are like suffering from different things. So somebody being told, somebody who lives in poverty, somebody who's dispossessed, being told, if you bless Israel, you know, you will be wealthy. You know, how, you know, that's very morally corrupt, but it gives them a promise, gives them hope. Or somebody like, you know, people in Puerto Rico, for example, you know, suffering from natural disasters, living actual apocalyptic times, being told the apocalypse is coming, you know. But if you bless Israel, you know, you will be on the right side of history. You will get wealth, you will get, you know, something will be better. You know, I really want to dwell on that, what that means for us and how we can possibly engage with these people, because you know, at the end of the day, if we go to these people and give them the right analysis and give them the right theology, I don't know, is it enough? What can we do? I mean, this is, I guess, why this socialist angle is important, right? What is our Christian work? What can it offer these people? Because they are being offered something by the Christian Zionists, which is a lie. It's a complete fiction. What you mentioned about piety is very important, but this is promise and this hope. And telling them that this is wrong and immoral, you know, I don't know if it moves them the right way. My second question is about the Black radical tradition, which I personally have been very influenced by throughout my life. And yet I was heartbroken, you know, to see, you know, that up until the 1960s, most of the people that inspired me have been staunch Zionists, like W.E.B. Du Bois, for example, but even Martin Luther King, you know, it's a very controversial thing to talk about. There are different views about it. There are Zionists who are trying to make him, you know, they created this hoax, this letter that he wrote, the anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. Yes, there's a fake letter by Martin Luther King that says that. It's a fake letter, it's a hoax. But it doesn't mean that he wasn't Zionist. He was also theologically dispensationalist. There's actually a good article about this, by Martin Kramer, called Where Martin Luther King Really Stood on Israel and Palestine. So a lot of people are trying to say that if Martin Luther King lived long enough, he would have stood with Palestine. But this article says it's not true, because Martin Luther King knew a lot more than we think he knew. And he was in Jerusalem at some point, met with a Palestinian delegation. And we met with the question, like, what do you think about the right of return? He said something that it's a stubborn effort to reverse history because he believed that Israel is an advancement of history in many ways. So my question is, like, how do we pursue this kind of, like, inner soul searching, you know, and reckoning with that history and that legacy, and how we can still, like, you know, adopt it, but still, like, really reckon with it seriously, and rather than just be selective about it. Thank you.
Yeah, my name's Jennifer. My pronouns are she, her. I am in a Mennonite church, and the Mennonites have been working a lot with Christians for a Free Palestine. Eastern Mennonite University has had a very strong interfaith presence in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, which is like 2 hours southwest of DC. And like in the past, the Muslim community have used EMU facilities to break their fast after Ramadan. Like there's been like very strong interfaith building before this moment. And one of the professors who had lived in Palestine years ago takes students every couple years. Another professor takes students to South Africa. Mennonites, they just walked from our town to DC over 120 miles over 10 days. They've done some disruptive actions. And the students over 4 days rang a bell on campus 33,000 times in March for every life counted at that point that had been lost. But one of the interesting things about Mennonites was they're not evangelical. They actually broke off during the Christian Reformation because they were refusing to be part of the nation state. Mm-hmm. And so they've always been anti-war. They've been conscientious objectors in other years, but it's been interesting to see them mobilize with the Muslim community in Harrisonburg, Virginia. They got the first ceasefire resolution of any city in Virginia. I come from an evangelical background, and so we've been with the Mennonites for years now, but it's been such a huge difference in that there's just not a concept of them ever being aligned with the state. And so their ability to stand against Kufi and things like that, again, is part of hundreds of years of tradition for them. And the last thing that was just a moment of hope. Like there is some hope. And I think I've been seeing it as like not all Christians believe in Zionism, just like not all Jews believe in Zionism. And so I see this parallel as Jewish Voice for Peace and Rabbis for a Ceasefire are trying to let people know, like, these are not one and the same. Don't conflate these. I think the Christians are trying to do that as well. I did want to say, based on my evangelical background, there's a quote from a woman named Rachel Held Evans who said, if you're reading the Bible and you think God is a God of love and God commits genocide in the Bible, then anything is possible. And so I think evangelicals really see, they don't see the violence, they see it as part of this greater plan of God's love, which is really twisted, but it is coherent for them. Yeah.
We have time for one more comment. I'm so sorry that I can't get to more. It's. I wish we had more time. One thing we didn't get to talk about as much is we talked about a little bit more about explicit forms of Christian Zionism, but we haven't really gotten to talk as much about the implicit forms and the way that this leaks into mainstream culture. So, I just before we wrap up, I will say that, and I'm gonna hand it to you in just a sec. We have some more resources. I had those QR codes up there. We have some handouts. So if you want to read more about this, do a deeper dive, and get into some of the things we didn't have time to talk with, we're here afterwards. But we'll take one more question, a few closing comments, and then we'll have to wrap up.
I have one quick request and one quick question. My request is, can I get contact info for each of you after this is over? And my question is, how do you explain the utter silence, the complete lack of any outrage from the Christian community when the IOF bombed some of the oldest Christian churches in the world, in the place where Christianity was born?
Great. great question. So we have, thank you all. We have 5 minutes for the speakers to close. So if you could take, you know, it's unfair. Maybe like 1 minute each to just, that's all we have. Okay, you too. Yeah. Just the what you're able to get to in a few minutes because we have to wrap up. I'm so sorry.
You know, so I'm really taking seriously this challenge to figure out a way to reach folk. It's like, apparently, murder is not a sufficient, it's not a compelling enough reason. How do you deal, if that's the beginning, like, how can we even have conversations? So I would say two things. One is, this is part of what we were saying last night. I really think we need to focus our energy and our effort in mobilizing Christians on the perhaps disillusioned, disaffected, peripheral folk who already have a critique of the Christian church, who already have a critique of the use and exploitation of Christianity, and who are waiting to be welcomed into a kind of congregation that is found on the front lines. I know for me, the most worshipful experiences I've had are in these protests, right? And there are lots more people. Like, we organize with Christians for Free Palestine, and people come up to us and say, oh my goodness, where have you been? Right? I've been looking for you. Instead of trying to persuade and be distracted by the violent, toxic rhetoric that folks have in these Christian Zionist spaces. A couple of things I would say in terms of theology. One is, like, we need to challenge this notion that God is transactional, right? That in order to be blessed, in order to have abundant life, in order to thrive, you gotta do X, Y, and Z. Well, that's a theology that you gotta reject wholesale. You can't just piecemeal and say, well, as it relates to Palestine, God is not transactional, but in relationship to my daily life, right? That needs to be abused, that kind of theology. So preaching that, right, that's biblical. And then reckoning with the theological necessity of violence, right? Because the same folk who are saying that the violence in Palestine is theologically and morally justified, part of God's plan, are the same folks who said Hurricane Katrina was part of God's plan to get rid of the queers in the French Quarter, right? Are the same folks who, right? So again, we have to reject violence as a theological necessity. That messes with a lot of people's atonement theology, right? If Jesus had to die, right? Because we're, right? So it really requires a remaking of one's theological world. And that takes time and relationship. And I only want to be doing that with people who show up to say, I know that what I believe is off. Please accompany me to liberation, right? I want to be working with those people.
Thank you. I'm going to try and hit the questions as I can. I think, Gumbo, thank you for your question. As I think about there, it relates to the other questions, is that there are UBC in Austin, Texas, been bringing in students and has continued even since the protests ended. Pastor there is incredible, who is also dealing with trying to educate her congregation. And I think were it not for her, it wouldn't be happening. So I want to say that. Her congregation is divided, if we can say that. So that is, I would say, emblematic of the not the implicit Christians. So progressive Christians who want to remain silent or who support what's happening. I think in my experiences, they are not educated about this. So in a lot of cases, it's not that they don't care. It's not that they're not smart. This information, granted now the genocide has been in almost every outlet that we can imagine, this information, the truth about Palestine has been so suppressed. And even prior to this genocide, it was, if we talk about this, we're anti-Semitic. We're going to be accused of being anti-Semitic. That I have found consistently in progressive white churches, that they say, come talk about Christian Zionism, and then I will. And then they're like, but we're going to be, you know, I've been invited and then uninvited. And then they said, but we want to hear from Jews. And I said, okay, great, which Jewish organization do you want to hear from? And then they said, or I asked them, do you want to hear from Palestinians? Because they're affected by this too. And then there was silence. So I wasn't just trying to be sassy. There was a little of that. But the question was genuine. You don't want to hear from me anymore because I'm whatever. But then you want to bring in Jewish voices. Which Jewish voices and why only Jewish voices? So this is the Christian Zionism that you're seeing in progressive white spaces often. And that's the silence, is we're going to be anti-Semitic. So I think people need, we need to keep educating those who are willing. Those who are unwilling, you know, they're invited in. Hey, friend, come. Come do the right thing and say no to genocide at the very least. And if you cannot do that, we're here waiting for you when you're ready. And I want to say when we did an interfaith ritual in D.C., we had people come from Kufi bring their Israeli flag and try to disrupt when one of our Hindu siblings was speaking. Leading service, and we had Jews, we had people who are Christian adjacent, we had Unitarians, we had Muslims. It was such a beautiful, diverse space, and we circled up, we put our masks on because they were recording us, and we sang. And we had de-escalators work on them, and we just kept on going. And that's what grounds, this is the values that ground us, so I think just continuing to show those values, because they pretty much beat us up when they threw us out, right? And we circled up, put our masks on, and kept singing that we're going to turn our plows or our swords into plowshares. So I think these are the values that undergird it, and I think we have to keep saying that and showing that even to the Christians who profess these values but are not living them.
Right.
And that could be the explicit and the implicit Christian Zionists. Because I have a lot of people I know in progressive Christian circles who are like, I'm not a Christian Zionist. I'm like, yes, you are. Well, I didn't say it out loud. I was like, tell me more about how you're not, but then you're saying Israel is a home for the Jews. When you have Jews who are saying, that's not right, but then you don't want to listen to them. It's the same reason that they don't care about the churches, is because there's Islamophobia and anti-Arab sentiment. That's why. It is so embedded in this culture. That's why they can blow up the churches and the Christians are like, huh. Israel's as a homeland for the Jews. That's what their response will often be. So it is so deeply ingrained in this culture, so deeply ingrained. So if people are willing, we have to complicate it for them. And I have amazing people that I know who are really kind, who are, oh, I support Palestine. And they said, what's a Zionist? So people have huge gaps in their knowledge about this. So if they're willing, they need help with those gaps. They need help with those gaps to come along to the truth. And it's not because I'm better, I'm great, I'm not even that smart. I research this stuff, so here I am, and I care. So people need that opportunity if they're willing. If they're not, we can circle up and they can come to the circle if they want. And if not, you know, they can keep on supporting genocide and see that it gets them nowhere.
Thank you all. I know we're over time, but we will stay here for a few minutes if you'd like to get contact information, more resources, or ask any other questions. So thank you all for coming.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.